these canonical variables were this A fields and this densitized triads. And from the equations of motion, from these we get constraints which we call Gaussian flatness, which is mirrored out. And this, by mirroring out these constraints, we calculated, yesterday we calculated the Poisson bracket of this mirrored out constraints and the densitized triad and field. So, and we got an interpretation that, I haven't finished writing that last equation, but we got the interpretation that this could be seen, treated as a rotation, right? The change they generate is the change generated by an infinitesimal rotation. That was the, by calculating the Poisson bracket of this with our smeared out constraint, right? We calculated this kind of things with our lines, right? The same for this one, and we did the same for the flatness constraint, which is this one, and we got similar formulas. I don't want to write everything down. That told us that we could actually interpret them as generating the infinitesimal changes by a translation, that were generated by a translation. So, so we have an interpretation for these constraints, but what is really important here is that in 3D gravity, the diffeos, the infinitesimal variations generated by diffeos can be expressed weakly in terms of translations and rotations. Okay, so 3D gravity is kind of special because we can express this diffeomorphisms in terms of this more simple mappings. So after that, we changed topic a little bit, which is like the Dirac quantization. So for the Dirac quantization, we split it in four steps. The first one was to promote like the phase space variables and to find a representation of them as operators in a Hilbert space, which we call the kinematical Hilbert space. And in the case, for example, of the parameterized particle, we had these variables. And we did what we usually do, which is just to promote this to something proportional to identity, and this to derivatives. Sorry, Q and T. Okay. And in the case of the parameterized particle, this was actually square integral functions. The CSR example, okay? So after that, we write our constraints as self-adjoint operators in the kinematical Hilbert space. And in our example, what we got from here was the Schrodinger equation. The third step was to find something like a reduced Hilbert space, the constraints, and we also need to define an inner product. I forgot to mention here, but we all know what the inner product for square integral functions are. Plus an inner product gives me a physical Hilbert space. However, this inner product was not the same as the one we had before, because that one actually would give us infinity solid time. So we actually had to restrict it to equal time conditions. And the four is to find a complete set of Gaussian invariant observables and in our case we said this was like FQ and FVQ. That was basically where we finished yesterday.
Okay. So okay. Here I'm just going to take that now and move. So yeah, Alvaro is right. We changed a bit topic yesterday. We finished with the classical analysis of the canonical formulation of 3D gravity, and then I introduced this Dirac quantization, which is what we want now to apply to gravity. Okay, and it's what we are going to start today. And in fact, today we are going to spend, I think, most of the lecture on just the first step of this Dirac, so this one, where we need to find what are the basic variables we are going to use, okay? And these are going to be even still at the classical level, but what are the variables we are going to use, and we are going to see that it's what we call the holonomy and flux variable. So, and here, what is important not to forget is that also we want to have that our operators are going to satisfy some commutation relation, which come from the commutator we had previously, okay? So we want to have this kind of relation where now we have this I H bar, and this is going to become a commutator, okay? So this is important. So what is the aim of what we are going to do now to get a theory of quantum gravity, but it's going to be a theory of quantum geometry. The aim is to use so this Dirac quantization to the system, and why this is also going to provide us the tools to derive a path integral quantization, as we are going to see, and also everything we are going to do is quite similar to the techniques, at least we are going to use, are quite similar to the ones which are needed in four dimension, okay? So this is why I'm going to show you explicitly what are all the steps, because all steps can be done explicitly in 3D, and then tell you what are the issues in 4D, okay? Okay, so the first step is really to select a set of basic variables, and this is very essential in the quantization process. So we want to apply the Dirac program to 3D gravity, and for this, we need to define what are the basic variables. So what do we want as this basic variable? We want that they form an algebra, okay? So this means that this kind of is closed, so we want that our basic variable and we want that they transform also in a very simple way under gauge transformation. Okay, so these are the two. In a simple way. The other point that we have here is that now we are dealing with fields. So, and in field theory, if you look at the Poisson bracket between fields, you're going to get distribution, okay? Because you're going to get delta function, so under gauge transform. And so this is something in field theory. So if now you look at the Poisson bracket between two, then this is going to be, so if I call, you sometimes we call that the momentum, we're going to get distribution. And this is, yeah.
One question, how do we gauge how simple they transform, the transformation is?
So we,
what do we mean?
So you're going to see that, so you, up to now, what we have looked at is the infinitesimal transformation, okay? Mm-hmm. But now we are going to look at the global transformation, okay? The finite transformation, and we want that it's a simple way, meaning that sometimes you don't have derivative or you don't have quadratic terms or depending on how it's going to transform. But we are going to see with the example of the holonomies, what we, and also with the fluxes. The point also is that we want, so we are going to have two different kind of variables, the holonomy and the fluxes here. And the way they, one is going to transform is also going to influence the way we're going to define the second one, because we want to have a kind of consistency between the two transformations in order that it's not complicated. So we are first going to define the holonomies, which are going to be very natural object of just the connection. And then this is going to give us also, with the transformation, we are going to also define in a specific way the fluxes. Okay, this is also going to tell us how to transform. Okay, so what is the issue here? It's, so it's not defined as a function, so it's itself, but it's just defined, you know, that the distribution is going to be defined by its action on a function where you need an integration. And so this means that now if you want to promote this to operators, you're not going to, it's not going to be proper operators, but operator with valued distribution, okay? So we need to smear this function, our variable here, to get rid of this delta function. And also we don't want to have any, because we don't want to have any integration, because the issue with integration in general relativity is that we want, so if we want to integrate, we need the metric to integrate in a diffeomorphism invariant way, okay? And then if you add the metric, then it's going to become a very complicated operator. Okay. So in order to get, always the idea is that when we want to quantize things, we need to have the simplest operator we can, okay? So in this, this is the motivation also to smear here the variable. So here we need to smear the function because we want to avoid, again, this delta function and the idea that we need to integrate. When you have a distribution, you need an integration. And as soon as you need an integration in GR, in a, if you want to integrate in a default invariant way, you need the metric. So we want to avoid that. So we need to smear the function here. In such a way that the resulting Poisson bracket here is going, do not involve any integration. Okay. So what is the solution? Need to smear the function. We are going to, so the solution here is to smear the basic variable. So here we are talking about, as Alvaro reminded it, we are talking about the connection and the densitized triad, okay? So we need to smear these basic variables here. And what is, how this is done? So here I'm going to give you the recipe for any dimension, and then we're going to apply that in 3D, but like this you will also know how to do that in 4D, okay? So over, so if we talk about just the configuration, here, variable, let's distinguish between configuration and the momentum. So then over a k-dimensional hypersurface. So if you do this for your configuration variable, and we are going to see that usually there is a way to choose what is this dimension, and then the conjugated variable has to be smeared over D, where D is the dimension of your manifold, minus K dimensional ones. And so what is this going to give if we apply this recipe is that in LQG, we are going to talk about holonomies and flux. So let's first introduce what are these holonomies. So the holonomies are going to come from the configuration variable here. We are going to take the connection as the configuration variable. So this is a bit maybe unusual from the point of view of the ADM formalism, where you're talking about a metric variable, and the metric is more related to the triad. Okay, but here we switch the point of view, so we choose another, and we use this as configuration variable. Okay. And why we do that is because then everything is going to be written in terms of more gauge, what we know as gauge, lattice gauge theory. So we can use the tool of lattice gauge theory. Okay, in Young-Mill theory, you're talking about also a connection and fields over the connection. So let's see how we define now this polynomies variable. So in our case, the configuration variable is the connection, and the connection is a one form. Okay, so we are going to, it's quite natural to integrate, so to smear it if you want, over one dimensional object, meaning a curve. Okay. So we're going to introduce a curve. And this is what is going to give us the holonomy. So then the geometric interpretation, we know that the connection A provides a definition of parallel transport of a vector with respect to the internal indices. That's why we introduce this pin connection, okay? It's to parallel transport vector with an internal indices, but it's at the infinitesimal level that we're doing that. And now the holonomy is going to be to allow us to define a finite parallel transport along a path, okay? So we are going to talk about path. So we are doing canonical quantization. So this means that, if you remember, we have done this splitting. Okay, so our manifold now is a 2D surface, and then this is kind of time evolution. So now we are going to talk about paths, curves in this 2D manifold. You have a question?
And do we lose any information?
No. So we are going to see that we are not going. At least we are not going. We are going to get. Once the theory is, we are at the last step of the Dirac program, meaning that we are talking only about observables. Okay, we can show that indeed in the holonomy, the gauge invariant object are going to be what we call the Wilson loops. Okay, so it's just closed loop. Then you can show that indeed with Wilson loop, you are going to recover all the gauge invariant information about the connection. So all at the gauge invariant level, we are not going to lose any information. Okay. Yeah?
Is there a reason that we choose one
one dimensional?
The we choose a one-dimensional curve because the connection is one problem.
Yeah. Okay. And so this is going to be still the case in four dimension. Okay, we still are going to work with the connection, which are still going to be a one form. So we're still going to integrate that, and it's still going to be considered as our configuration variable over curve. But so now, what is going to be, if we use what I said here, now the conjugated variable are going to be integrated in 3D. So in 3D, our conjugated variable is a densitized triad. And so if we use that, D is equal to 3. Okay, no, D, sorry, is equal to 2 now because we're on the 2D surface, minus 1. So we are still going to also integrate the densitized triad over one-dimensional object. But in 4D now, if you are doing also the canonical analysis, your spatial space is going to be three-dimensional. So 3 minus 1, you're going to get 2D. So in 2D, in 4D, we are going to get different objects. We're still going to work about holonomies, but now the fluxes are going to be living on a surface, whereas here they are still living on a curve. Okay, so this is going to be a bit different. So let's just so holonomies, and here they are going to give us the finite parallel transport. Of a vector along a curve, and so we are going to talk about this kind of object associated to a curve, so gamma. It's going to be a function of the connection, and since these are going to be SU2 group elements, and in fact, we're going to need to introduce. We're going to solve that, but you're going to see that it's the path integral, the path ordered exponential of okay, then we have additional so I'm going to come back on that, and you're also during the tutorial this afternoon, you're also going to work, and I'm going to give you explicitly the definition of that in a moment. You're also going to work on these holonomies. Function, which are quite important. So then we also have the conjugated variable. The triad. And just as I said just above, we are going also to smear them over one-dimensional submanifold. And here we are going to consider the cotriad, which is also a one form. So it's because we can now. And I'm going to introduce some new notation. Which is related to the, let me explain you in a moment, related to the densitized triad in this way. And this is going to be smeared over a curve. Okay, again, we are going to consider the, here it's a one form, so that's why it's very natural to integrate it over a curve, okay? And so what is this object now? So here we are going to, it's quite useful to understand everything in terms of Lie algebra valued form, okay? And so here it's what this means, Tj here. So we are talking about SU2 or SO3. We are going to take Tj to be related. We can take them related to the Pauli matrices. And then we have this commutation relation here. Ijk, sorry. So this is what defining the SU2, or it's the same as SO3 algebra. So these T are the SU2 or SO3 generators, okay, of the Lie algebra generator. And here, this EA is what we call a Lie valued one form. And it's quite useful to understand to work with this Lie-valued object. So are you familiar with this kind of object or not yet? Not really? Okay, so I'm going to Okay, so the front one is not working. Ah, now. So let's look. So now I'm going, everything is going to be written in terms of this Lie-valued object, the Lie-algebra valued object. So let's look at the transformation. I'm going to use that to define the holonomies, okay? So I need that to define the holonomy. So let's look at the transformation of basic fields that seems seen as Lie-algebra. And so for this, you need a very important relation that you already seen in the last tutorial, I think. It's a relation between the adjoint representation of SU2 and the vector representation of SO3 or SU2, if you want, as vector. So we have this equality, where here I'm talking about the rotation associated to, so G here can be seen as a SU2 group element. And here, it's a rotation associated to the SU2 group element. So if you want, it can be seen as a vectorial representation of SU2 or SO3, which are the same, okay? So here we have this relation. Okay, and I think you proved this relation in the last tutorial. Where here, this tells you just exactly that the adjoint representation of SU2, which is given by here the right-hand side, is equivalent to the vector representation of SO3 on its Lie-algebra, okay? So we are going to use this. So here it's just the rotation associated to this SU2 group element, okay? And here we are talking about product of matrices, okay? Okay, so here is the product of matrices. So if you choose, for example, here I define T as being related to this Pauli matrices. So this means it's a 2x2 matrix, okay? And indeed, this means that here, it's what I said, G is in the spinorial representation, the 1/2 representation, so it's also a 2x2 matrix, okay? Mm-hmm. And so now we are going to use that to determine what is the transformation of the basic field since as Lie-algebra valued object. So what are our fields? We have the triad, the connection, and also the curvature, which was considered as a one form, okay? So we have seen, at least for the triad, that A, but also this connection, the curvature, so with this internal index J is going to transform, so they transform as a vector, okay? So we say that they transform in the vector representation of the rotation group. Okay, so let's see what does it, using this expression, let's see what does it mean in the, how they transform in the, if they transform in the adjoint representation, okay? So here, let's apply this, and contract this with a vector vk. Okay, I'm going to contract this and let's see what we can say. So vk r of g then is going to be equal to vk. Sorry, so it's a vector. So it's in this internal representation. And so what is that? Here we are talking about, in fact, the inverse, because you know that the inverse is a transpose of the acting on this vector v. And then this is a new vector with index l. OK, so you see that this is the inverse. So now I can go back to the rotation. So this means that the action of the rotation on v contracted with tj, okay, so this is a vector contracted again with this matrix, is going to be equal to g g minus 1. Okay, is that clear? And this is our Lie valued object. So if now, you remember that for the triad, we have seen that it's going to be transformed under rotation like a vector. So this means now, if we want to work with a Lie valued object, okay, that I'm going to define as EA, so now you only have one special index, you don't have any internal indices. Okay, so if you have an object like this, this means that this is just the Lie-valued object. Okay, and using this relation that we have here, we know that when a vector is transforming under a rotation, okay, the Lie-valued object, so this one, is going to transform under the adjunct representation. Okay? So here, this means that here the transformation for the Lie valued object prime is going to be, this is going to transform as under the adjunct representation. Okay? So this is now, you see that this is a finite transformation that we're going to use. And of course, you could do the same with with the curvature tensor, okay, define the Lie valued object. And then you also have So this is the finite transformation when you consider now a Lie-valued object, okay? Now let's introduce the Lie-valued object associated to the connection. And here, if you remember what was the transformation of the connection, okay, so here what you need to do, I remind you, you need to use the definition of the connection in terms of the triad. And you remember that it was defined as the covariant curvature of the triad contracted with another triad. And then if you expand that, so using now the transformation of the triad or the co-triad, then you can find that there is some derivative involved here. So now I'm just going to give you the result. As a Lie-valued object, then the transformation is going to be given, the gauge transformation is going to be given as so here when we are doing this, when we are working with Lie algebra valued object, what we are going here, it's in fact the kind of identification. So the tangent space at each point of our spatial manifold now is identified with the SU2 Lie algebra. Okay, so we consider that now. And the tangent spaces at different points need to be related by each other. So we need a parallel transport, and it is what is going to, the holonomy is going to be used for. Okay? So let's see what is the definition. So any question on that? Okay, so I'm sure that, yeah, in many articles on talking about Young memes or stuff, usually you're going to talk about this Lie algebra valued object, and we're going to see how you work with that. It allows us to, in fact, simplify a lot the notation. Instead of having many indices, then everything is much simpler. So now, how do we define the holonomy? So given an internal vector, that I'm considering as a Lie valued object at a point x. Okay, I want to parallel, so this is my vector. I want to parallel transport it and define this v prime. So we want the parallel transport along the curve. Let's call gamma s this curve, where s belongs to 0, 1. And so you know that the tangent vector to your curve is gamma dot, which is just the derivative with respect to this parameter. So now what is the parallel transport along the curve? So we know that V is going to, so V is a vector, a Lie valued vector, so it's going to transform in the adjoint representation. So we define, so we know that V transform in the adjoint representation. So we define the parallel transform of V by, so at the point S, V of S is given by where H of S is the holonomy from the point gamma zero, which is x here, to so let's see now what this is going to imply. So first, from this, we can deduce what is going to be the transformation under local gauge transformation. So if we take, so gauge transformation is a rotation or SU2 group element at the finite level. Okay, if we talk about finite transformation now and not infinitesimal one. So what is here? First, we can deduce the transformation, and then under local gauge transformation. G of x, it's a SU2 group element. So the transformation of the holonomy . So what do we get here? And this is how we are going to see that it's a simple. So H of S is going to be defined as G of, at the point guys. And so you see that here you have two different polynomials for the connection. Okay. You are at the end point of your path and at the beginning of your path. Okay. So h of s is the polynomial from x to gamma s. Okay. So you have your path. You start at x, and then here it's on your graph. You have this gamma s. This is the polynomial. And so you see that you have two different group elements here. And where this come from, it's because now if you go at the infinitesimal level, and this is what you are going to show also during the tutorial this afternoon, that at the infinitesimal level, indeed you recover this transformation for the connection. And the fact that you have these two different group elements here is what is going to give you that you have a derivative term here, okay? If you want the derivative term. So this is what you're going to also look at during the tutorial. And you can show that, indeed, with this local gauge transformation, this definition is still valid. OK, so let's now try to find the equation defining this holonomy, so write it explicitly in terms of the connection. Okay, it's what we want to do. So what is the Lie derivative for a Lie algebra valued scalar? So now V is a, you see that here V can be seen as a Lie algebra valued scalar. Okay. So we need the covariant derivative. So the covariant derivative is related to the parallel transport with the motivation to parallel transport object. So now I'm going to talk about the Lie algebra valued scalar here. What do we get? So where does this come from? Is that clear to everyone? So do you remember that for a vector, you would have get for V, you would have get okay. So this was the definition. So do you see the link between the two? So Marcelo, you should know because I explained you yesterday how you get the epsilon here. Okay, so if you rewrite here, so this is Ti and this is okay, so what does it mean? So this is a commutator because we are talking about now matrices, okay, Lie algebra valued object. And so of course these are just numbers, so you can put them out. And then you end up with the okay, and by definition these are the SU2. Yeah, the SU2 generator, so you get epsilon ijk tk. Tk, okay, which give you exactly this term. Then you factorize here by the tk. Okay, so it's a way you simplify the equation when you're dealing with this Lie algebra valued object. You see that here you don't have any indices anymore. Okay, you don't have any. Yeah.
One thing that I just. So I don't get confused. So now that we have the generators of the group, we also have the indices, internal indices, in which like we can expand, for example, that bj, tj.
Yeah.
These are not the same internal indices as the one we tried. No.
Yeah, it's the one. That's why here. So here is just for any one form or any vector. Okay, and here that's why now we can build. We can define this Lie algebraic valued object. Okay, so here is the J. Here mm-hmm. is the internal indices of the.
Okay.
Of the triad, okay, coming from the triad. Here I'm talking about the densitized one, so you have also this epsilon AB, but it's on the spatial indices. And here the J is the J of the internal indices, okay? So now all internal indices you are a bit hidden, okay, because you contract them, at least in 3D, since we are talking only about one form, or we have only one internal indices usually for all these objects, then we contract them with this generator of SU2, and then we have this Lie algebraic valued object, okay? Which, in fact, you can, it's mostly simplifying all the notation, because then you don't deal with indices and everything, but in most of the literature, you're going to use this kind of definition. And all the objects I'm going to define now are much simply written in terms of this object, and I think it's still useful for you to also have a look to that, because it's really what is used in many, in a lot of the literature. Okay, so what does it mean now that the fact that V is parallel transported along the curve, this means that the derivation, the covariant derivative along the curve has to be zero here, okay? Yeah, so this is one, it's a good question. Yeah, indeed, now all our objects with internal indices we started with are hidden in this contraction, okay? But it's really the indices which was coming from the fact that we introduced a triad in our as a variable, okay? So from the parallel transport of V, we demand that we have this, the derivative along the curve gamma has to be equal to zero, okay? So this is the derivative along the curve. So let's develop this. So what do we get? We get that it's a derivative. V of S is defined as here, okay? So it's a derivative along the curve. So for this term, we can use it like this. Of V0 plus a second term where now we have the V0 which does not depend on the S. Okay, where here I use this definition. Plus, so I have still the commutator, okay? So don't forget about the commutator term here. I'm just expanding it and contracting with the gamma dot. Okay, so here I just use this definition and then I expand this derivative, okay? So now I need to simplify a bit this one. So here you can use the fact that, of course, H minus 1 is identity, so the derivative with respect to S here is equal to 0, and then you're going to get a minus sign. And so what do we get here? This equality can be simplified into these two commutators. Okay, so these first two terms give this commutator, and the second one gives the commutator between and this has to be equal to zero. So we get here, we can deduce the differential equation, which is going to define the holonomy. So what is the differential equation that we get here from this is that this is equal to minus gamma dot, which depend on the point gamma s, okay, h of s. And so this is the differential equation, and we have an initial condition. What is our initial condition here? It's that h of zero is identity. Okay, so this is a well-known differential equation. The solution is well-known. The only issue here is that this is not a constant term, okay? So how do we solve that? So we do that step by step, and can show that in the let's you get
like to add the general question be do we assume when we define x0 equals 0 that the topology of the spatial surface is trivial?
So here we don't at this stage we haven't done any assumption on the configuration, on the topology of the spatial space.
Like, if the space is, for example, a torus, then how about the holonomies that go around the circle that cannot be
contractible?
Contractible.
Yeah, so this is going to be thin when we're going to, when we want to apply the flatness constraint, because indeed we are going to see that the flatness constraint is going to tell you that if you don't have any global degrees of freedom, as you said, that all closed holonomy has to be equal to identity, okay? But indeed, when you have a torus around this, you will see these global degrees of freedom appearing, okay?
What will the flatness condition say about that?
So here we are just at the kinematical level. So we are just talking about on the manifold, you can still define the curve, and it doesn't have to be a closed curve here, okay? But then at some point, so these are our basic variable. But then we are going to apply the constraint, and the dynamics is going to be given by the flatness constraint. So explicitly what we are going to do, as because it's simpler, we are going to consider a sphere and see that indeed on the sphere define what is the spin network associated to when we solve the flatness constraint, which is going to tell you that all loops are going to holonomies around any loops are going to be identity. But then it's going to be more complicated, or it's already a good exercise even in 3D to look at the topology of a torus, okay, where indeed here you will have this global degrees of freedom, and so you won't be able to have these loops equal to identity. Yeah. Okay. So, but this, at the kinematical level, for the moment, we don't really need to assume anything about the topology here. Okay. For this definition. Okay. So I'm just going to solve this equation like this. Then you will have the definition of the holonomies in terms. So do you guess what is going to be the solution here? I already gave it to you. Yeah, the path order exponential, okay? So where do you see that? So you do step by step, and in fact, you will have to redo that more or less in the tutorial this afternoon, so I'm not going to do it very, I'm not going to give you too many steps, but so you can check that, of course, the first step is going to give you that this is going to solve this. I'm going to remind that here. S prime, yeah. Is a solution, but you see that indeed here this is not the final solution because you still have this dependence on the holonomy, but you can iterate this kind of solution. So the idea is to kind of solution, and if you do this, what you get at the end as a solution, and you will see that during the tutorial. So the H gamma of S is going to be given by the path ordered exponential. So let me just give you the definition. And you will hopefully be convinced that this is still true. So it's an infinite sum of, you have this minus one coming from here, and then you ordered your integration D of S1, and here it's a product of matrices, and I'm going to give you what are these matrices. And these matrices are ordered from the larger to the smallest parameter S. Okay. So from left to right, it's from the largest to the smallest one. So here it's S2, where and so you are going to study a bit the property of this holonomy this afternoon, but just to conclude what I want to say, so the very important point now is that indeed we are going to forget completely about the connection and work only in terms of holonomies in the loop framework. And what are the basic property of this holonomies? So you will show during the tutorial that this holonomy, the definition is independent of the parametrization of the path. Okay, so it's independent of this S parameter. So you can show that by choosing a reparametrization. And also, so if now I give you two edges, two paths like this, so let's call E1 and E2, which are oriented, okay? Then I can define a new just path E. And then what is the nice thing about holonomy is that indeed you have that the holonomy associated to this path can be defined as the product of the holonomy of E1 times the holonomy along E2. Okay, and you also have that if you want to change the orientation of your path, then you look at this one. You have that the holonomy associated to the path with the other orientation is just the inverse of holonomy. So the holonomy really encodes the connection. It's a one form, and they're really not when the connection, because the connection are really naturally integrated over one dimensional path, okay, over curve. And it's a very, so this connection, this holonomy is a very natural function of the connection. It has a very nice geometrical interpretation, and we have seen that it has a simple behavior under gauge transformation. So you just have this property here. And so we're really going to now work only with this object and completely forgot about the connection, okay? But of course here, we just define one part of the basic variable, which are the holonomies, and we still need to introduce the fluxes to have our basic set of variables, then to quantize it and to define the kinematical Hilbert space. Yeah?
The holonomy is a one-form, you said?
No, sorry, the connection is a one-form that we integrate over this.
What is the structure of the holonomy as an object, mathematically?
It's a SU2 group element.
Okay. group element.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here, with this connection, it's defined as a suitable polynomial. Of course, we can define holonomies for other groups. And but here we see, and even in SO4, in 4D, we're still going to have as a basic variable SU2 holonomies, okay? As fundamental for the kinematical differences. Okay, thanks, guys.